The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of drugwarfacts.org. On Tuesday, July 16th, the Guardian newspaper had this headline, Scotland records huge rise in drug-related deaths. According to the Guardian, quote, Scotland's drug-related death toll has increased by 27% over the past year to reach a record high of 1,187, putting the country on a par in terms of the fatality rate per capita with the United States, end quote. In the House of Commons, the Scottish Affairs Committee is holding an inquiry into problem drug use in Scotland. On Tuesday, July 2nd, that committee held a hearing. We're going to hear portions of that now. The committee is chaired by Pete Wishart. He's a member of the Scottish National Party. We're going to hear portions of the second panel that they were talking to, and I will let the panelists introduce themselves.
Thank you. Jason Pugh from Thames Valley Police. Detective Chief Inspector and implemented Thames Valley Police's diversion scheme, which is a pre-arrest scheme designed to... Do I need to be worried about that bell?
No, it's telling us it was started.
Run outside. Thank you. Which is a pre-arrest diversion scheme which enables everyone found in possession of a controlled drug, regardless of their age or regardless of the type of drug, to receive an initial assessment at the drug service and... an education programme which is non-judgmental and provides better outcomes for that individual.
Thank you. I'll just call you Mr. Johnson, if that's okay.
That's absolutely fine.
I'm not even too sure what ACC is, but you could tell us. Assistant Chief Constable.
I'm glad you got that. So I'm Steve Johnson, Assistant Chief Constable. I was the lead for Specialist Crime and Intelligence for Police Scotland for the past 3 years and hold the drugs strategy portfolio, responsible in the main for targeting organised crime and dealing with counter-terrorism in Scotland.
Thank you.
Morning, my name's Kevin Weir. I'm a Detective Superintendent in Durham Police and I'm the strategic lead for the Checkpoint programme, which offers a four-month diversion from prosecution if you comply with the issues that you've got and you don't result in any prosecution if you successfully comply.
My name's Alex Stevens. I'm Professor in Criminal Justice at the University of Kent. I recently stepped down as President of the International Society for the Study of Drug Policy. I'm a member of the Advisory Council on the Misuse of Drugs for the UK, and I was the lead author of its report in 2016 on reducing opioid-related deaths in the UK, and also its very recent report on reducing drug-related harms in transitions between custody and community. I should mention that I cannot speak on behalf of the Council, because only the Chair can speak on behalf of the Council, but I can speak about the Council as an independent academic. And I should also declare I'm also a special advisor to the Health and Social Care Select Committee. I'm also a special advisor to the Health and Social Care Select Committee on its similar inquiry that it's running at the moment and will be meeting this afternoon.
Okay, well, three very distinguished police officers with us today with vast experience in this particular field. How does criminal justice interventions help us deal with some of these issues that we've heard about today, and how does it help us address some of the appalling drug deaths that we've had in Scotland? Does criminal justice interventions work? We'll start with you, ACC Johnson.
And I suppose I think it's a balance. Clearly, I can give you some statistics. Certainly, I've been in Police Scotland for the past 3 years, and we're not shy of 3,000 drug-related deaths in Scotland. The official statistics, if you like, 2015, 539, 2016, 788, 2017, 903, and 2018. And this is an unofficial statistic. I keep a tally of the drug-related deaths every day. We're going to hit around about 1,067, maybe just break the 1,100 mark once we get past the suspected drug deaths. So, since 2015, the figures have doubled in Scotland. And for me, those are not just statistics. I get reported every day the names, the ages and the locations across Scotland. And of the 13 divisions, there isn't a division in Scotland that hasn't seen an increase. And certainly from 2017 to 2018, very, very nearly a 20% increase in drug-related deaths. And I suppose one thing I would want to get across to the committee is probably the sense that's felt by the sort of root and branch officers of what I think they would call the hamster wheel. And that's our custody staff and our operational staff. that see people, and it's just a matter of time that they come through the custody door, they get processed through the criminal justice process, they go in through the sheriff's courts, they go into prison. Of those people that come out of prison, 11% of them will die within the first month of having been released, according to the statistics. But the police officers get used to this carousel, you know, this sense of hopelessness and helplessness. Their first duty of every police officer is to preserve life. And when people don't come back through the doors with that alarming frequency, it's probably because the person's dead. It's not because there's been a successful intervention through the criminal justice process. So that is a sense, if you like, of the foreboding sense within law enforcement. But there is an awful lot of good that we do with partners around diversionary schemes, trying to divert people away from criminal justice, work that we do with young offenders in Polmont, trying to divert them away from organised crime. But overwhelmingly the sense is, for me, dealing with a serious and organised crime group, you know, we've had some successes. There was a question earlier on. From 163 serious and organised crime groups in Scotland, we're down to about 96 now. But actually what's missing, I think, in the criminal justice process is it's seen as supply, importation, almost sort of white-collar sense to the criminality. And the criminality of these organised crime groups, I don't believe, is linked to the harm that's caused to the citizens in Scotland. And it's death, and it's death on a large scale. It's an epidemic scale.
I think we all appreciate just the work that the police service do in terms of trying to keep people safe, and we've seen great examples of that, and some of that's been presented to this committee. But what we're finding difficult to understand is, I mean, we can understand disrupting supply and, you know, going after the big criminals who, you know, are the leaders of organised crime. But does criminalising drug users actually seriously assist them in dealing with the problems? And that's what we need to hear from you, and maybe you could help us with that.
Yeah, sure. I think from our point of view, we obviously look after victims as best we possibly can, but from a point of view of an offender, most of the offenders we meet are vulnerable in some way because they have some issue that attracts them to commit the crime. And what we try to do is work with them to do that. So if we're talking about specifically drugs, we will offer checkpoint schemes, which is our diversion scheme, to people who are low-level suppliers. So they supply to the friends in the streets, or we make a distinction between sad versus bad, and we have a scale that we use to be able to do that. But actually, we try to change their underlying causes of why they commit crime and improve their life chances, so actually they can stop committing crime but actually take a better part in society. So we've developed a scheme which is a four-month deferred prosecution. Yeah. They have to admit the offence, or at least we have enough evidence.
I want to come specifically to some of the things that you guys are doing, because we are impressed by some of the things that's been offered by the police service. But I'm just interested in this ideological question. You're police officers, you're the front line and the interface between the criminal justice system. Yeah. You're not health professionals. You're not experts in addiction disorders. No. And maybe you could help us with this, Mr. Q.
Yes.
Why is it you guys that are dealing with this issue and not health professionals, and what do you actively contribute to making this better?
So I can speak from a personal point of view, and I don't want to bring my organisation into any form of disrepute from my own views. So individually, criminalisation doesn't work for simple possession of drugs. And I say that because there's a significant amount of stigma attached to policing. So taking best evidence from Checkpoint and West Midlands Turning Point schemes and Bristol's Drugs Education Programme, all have seen evidence that actually the role of police and the role of capture and punishment has little effect actually on drugs possession. And I'm only talking about drugs possession in isolation here. So what is the role of police in drugs possession? And the police aren't punishers. We collect evidence, and as ACC Johnson just mentioned, the primary role of police officers is to prevent harm. And such significant numbers of drug-related deaths, my role, has turned towards a health-based approach to enable education, no stigma, and the most teachable moment, and there's strong evidence to suggest this, the teachable moment in any interaction with police is that moment on the street. So what can we do to maximise that opportunity when someone comes into contact with police officers there and then on the street?
Okay, thank you. And Professor Stevens, I know you can't speak on behalf of the Advisory Council on the Misuse of Drugs, but you can speak about it. This committee is having a difficulty about what your formal role is when it comes to government policy. You advise government on the evidence about drugs issues. Would that be correct?
Yes, the council has a statutory duty under the Misuse of Drugs Act to advise ministers on the reduction of drug-related harms.
And what usually happens to that advice?
If that advice is to tighten control on drugs, it is generally accepted. If that advice is to loosen control on drugs, it is generally refused.
It's next to useless then, given the evidence that we've heard about the fact that drug consumption rooms work internationally, the decriminalisation seems to make...
I would strongly dispute that the council is next to useless.
The government knows this evidence, though.
The government doesn't always know the evidence. We are...
Isn't that your job to give it to them?
We do give it to them, yes. And it's the government's prerogative to refuse or accept it. Sometimes they accept it. So, for example, when we recommended that naloxone should be made more available in 2013, it was made more available, and that's probably saved people's lives. In 1988, when we advised the government that it was more important to keep people alive than it was to punish them for using drugs, the government accepted that advice, and we had created a harm reduction system that was the envy of the world and saved loads of people's lives.
So you advise government, based on the evidence that you see and you've acquired, probably some that you've even commissioned, look at international examples, you present that to government. If it's something which suggests a hardening approach to drugs, they tend to accept it. If anything which leads to a more liberal approach, they say, no, we don't like that. It doesn't fit with our general policy of sending a message, which seems to be government policy when it comes to...
Yes, which I think is fascinating, because we've just heard from senior police officers with a wealth of experience that they can no longer toe the government line, which is that we need to criminalise people to send a message to reduce harm. We've heard from these senior police officers that just does not fit with their professional expertise.
So we don't need a better arrangement than this, then? Where you spend all this time presenting them with evidence, which is then rejected, and then conditions and situations possibly get worse. We've got these drug deaths over here in Scotland. Do we not need to make sure the government can accept the evidence? And
I would much prefer that the government not only accepted the evidence, but actually put it into practice. So, for example, in the 2016 report on reducing opioid-related deaths in the UK that the ACMD published, we had several recommendations, and the government formally accepted all of them, except the one on drug consumption rooms. So it formally accepted that our recommendation, the most important one, was that investment in opioid substitution treatment therapy of optimal dosage and duration should be maintained. Now, they formally accepted that recommendation. They've since cut the public health budget in England by 25%. We recommended that there be central funding provided for heroin-assisted treatment. They formally accepted that recommendation on the basis that there should be heroin-assisted treatment, but they said it was up to local authorities to provide the heroin-assisted treatment, not acknowledging the fact they've massively cut the amount of money that local authorities have available to provide heroin-assisted treatment. So while they sometimes accept our recommendations in the letter, in the actual practice, we don't see that. Okay. But that's not for the council. The council has no powers to implement policy. All we can do is recommend policies to the government. It is the government's democratic duty and right to decide whether to implement our advice or not.
We're listening to a hearing before the Scottish Affairs Committee of the House of Commons that was held on the 2nd of July. They're discussing problem drug use in Scotland. The hearing panel includes Professor Alex Stevens from the University of Kent, also a member of the Advisory Council on Misuse of Drugs, Chief Inspector Jason Kew, the Drugs Policy Lead at Thames Valley Police Force, Assistant Chief Constable Steve Johnson with Police Scotland, and Superintendent Kevin Weir, Durham Police. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. These are high-ranking senior police officers in Scotland and two English police departments. All of them are calling for changes in the law, all of them expressing support for supervised consumption facilities and for a health-based approach to drug policy. Let's get back to that hearing.
I'll let Superintendent
first. From my point of view, my organisation treats people as vulnerable. What we're trying to do is work within the legislation that currently exists to be able to do different things. So we're trying to look at heroin-assisted treatment centres with partners, because we can do that with a licence from the Home Office. We're looking at what we do with low-level people who function in their lives around drugs, because within the legislation we can divert them from prosecution and we can give them an out-of-court disposal which prevents them going to court. So we... do speak to the Home Office. The Home Office have been several times to visit the force, but the organisation of Durham Police wants to treat everybody at a lower level with current legislative guidance that's already there, and that's what we do. We don't break the law. We don't not arrest people for drug-related offences. We just dispose of them differently.
So can I just explore this a little bit more? Because it seems to me that we've got this situation in public policy now throughout the UK, more acute in Scotland, where you have... You've got the body of Home Office legislation and practice, which I think is no longer fit for purpose, but no one wants to particularly change it, and they won't admit that. So there's an element within, probably of embarrassment amongst within the Home Office that actually just will choose to turn a blind eye to certain stuff, or will allow some leniency if people want to push something and give dispensation for it. On the other hand, you've got this drive towards... people trying to have alternative outcomes to criminal, alternative approaches to criminal justice to the problem, using health intervention and harm reduction techniques and all the rest of it, which you as practitioners on the ground are seem to see merit in and are being dragged into that as well. So we have this sort of lack of clarity in terms of really what people should be doing and what is official policy, which gives you some discretion. And that brings us to what DCIQ was saying in terms of you presumably have to, in your operational policies, you have to make a judgment as to what the priorities should be, given you can't do everything all the time, and you have to decide which is better in the public interest. So, for example, we have 500,000 people using cannabis in Scotland every week. Technically, you could arrest every single one of them and give them a criminal record. I mean, that's the law, but you don't do that because it would be ridiculous. So you don't bust every student with a joint or every kid at a club with a pill or whatever. My question is this. If someone were to set up a drug consumption centre in Glasgow or elsewhere and to say this is an intervention that, you know, the crisis now demands that we do, would it be in the public interest for Police Scotland to close that down and to arrest people?
I think, so given our duty around preservation of life, I don't think it would be in the broader public interest. But from an officer perspective, so if you're an officer and you're walking the streets of Glasgow where that facility is and you stop someone who's on their way in possession of those drugs, there's a hefty dose of the woulda, coulda, shoulda squad. So if the person doesn't then go to the safe facility and take those drugs where they have access to naloxone and medical support and medical intervention, but actually takes himself down off by the side of the Clyde and injects and falls in the river and dies, the woulda, coulda, shoulda would be, what are the police doing? You had a power, you didn't exercise it. That person should have been in a custody facility, put in front of the sheriff, from the sheriff to the courts, and we know the story. But that's a harsh reality faced. You know, we see police officers making life and death decisions, albeit at the time it doesn't feel like a life and death decision, that's trying to base the pragmatism of preservation of life and potentially work with a facility like that. Yet society and the litigious nature of society is that would probably be a death after police contact, a referral to the perk, an officer's life in turmoil for making what they thought was a pragmatic right decision for the right sort of outcome, but just didn't actually work out that way. So within the system, yeah, there's not that much clarity. There is a fear, because actually we should be, you know, 1971. If 1,000 people died on the roads in Scotland, we would have seen changes in the Road Traffic Act. We'd have seen enforcement being different in that. But we would have also seen a systemic and whole system approach to that, which we have seen in terms of road traffic, in terms of building vehicle designs, preventative activity. So we're not seeing a consistency in the approach around the nature of harm. So when 1,000 odd people die, it seems a little bit odd that actually 48 years after an act, when given the increase in technology, the proliferation of the use of technology and the commission of the supply, so this can be delivered to people's houses who are very, very vulnerable, very, very young, easy access, completely invisible to an awful lot of law enforcement or the medical profession. So we're not seeing the legislation keep step with society and the advances in society, let alone protecting officers who are trying to uphold the law for all the best intentions around preservation of life.
Yes, Professor
Stevens. I think this is fascinating because what we're hearing is the police creating ways to reduce the harm that's being done by the Misuse of Drugs Act, with police at local level saying this is if we actually fully implemented this law of criminalising everyone who we find in possession of these substances, we would be creating harm. So in the interests of serving our communities, we're not going to create those harms. We're going to find ways of not doing that. The problem is it then leaves police services and individual officers in invidious positions such as have just been described. And we asked earlier about the difference between diversion and decriminalisation. That's one of the advantages of actually decriminalising it and doing it in the law, is you're reducing this ambiguity and helping the police in terms of giving them some clarity, both at the individual officer level and at the service level, as to what the government and the public wants us to do about drugs that actually does reduce harm rather than increasing the harms of this vulnerable population.
It almost strikes me like there's almost like a dishonesty going on here, where the government have got one approach that they've decided is going to be their policy towards drugs, and that's what they present to the public. They're tough on drugs, they're not going to change the law, they're sending out a message because of legality. And then we've got senior police officers on the street doing something entirely different. Wouldn't it be just much better just to have a consistency of policy and approach?
Yeah. I mean, there's two simple things that could be done to create some of that consistency. So, for example, the misuse of drugs regulations could be amended so that it was no longer an offence for a person who was employed by a drug consumption room to be in possession of a substance. That would help the police be clear about whether they do or don't arrest those people. And we could amend Section 8 of the Misuse of Drugs Act to make it clearer that people who are running a drug consumption room are not going to be subject to prosecution for running a premises that's being used for production of drugs. These are quite simple changes that could be made.
How could they be amended? Could that be done by secondary legislation?
The Misuse of Drugs Act is secondary legislation, so that would be easier than the changing the Misuse of Drugs Act.
So a statutory instrument could give effect to that?
The Misuse of Drugs Regulations 2001 already include exemptions, people who are exempt from the offence of possession. So you could expand that list of exemptions to include people who are working in a drug consumption room. And that would be very easy. I mean, there's a statutory instrument going through right now about correcting an error that was made around the banning of third generation synthetic cannabinoids.
You know, Wednesday, that statutory instrument will be presented to Parliament.
So. Yeah, so it's a statutory instrument. It could be done pretty quickly.
While we have time, we're going to skip to the very end of that hearing and a question that gets put by Tommy Shepherd, Member of Parliament, Scottish National Party.
I'm intrigued by this question. We've got two representatives of two English forces in front of us who we've invited you here because you're doing interesting and innovative stuff. And I think in each case, the PCC is given the political backing to this, as it were. What I'm now curious about is to whether or not you guys are on your own in terms of the general view of operational police managers in this country, or whether you think your colleagues in the other forces, who maybe they may not have the same particular schemes that you have in operation, but whether the general feeling is there that actually the 71 Act now needs to be changed, repealed, overhauled, or whatever. Would you say that that's... And of course, we see an awful lot of former police officers who no longer constrained by office are actually joining in the campaign for legislative change. So do you think this is now the settled view of the police service throughout England, that the law needs to be changed? And to Steve Johnson, you presumably are in contact with you talk with colleagues in other forces. Do you think that this is something that should be reflected in Scotland if indeed it is a significant overall change?
Yeah, I was just thinking then, you know, for the Act to have come into force in 1971, that means most of the work was probably done in the late 60s. If you think back to the late 60s, I'm just about able to remember that. Actually, the technological advances, the science advantages, the distribution networks. In many respects, this one aspect of policing, that, and even the title, misuse of drugs, or the supply of drugs and the use of drugs within our society, if there's one area that is ripe for a refresh of the legislation and a refresh of the evidence base, I would suggest it's the Misuse of Drugs Act 1971.
So, Old Shear, yeah?
Well, are your two forces... the exception that proves the rule, or are you out on a limb?
No, I think from our point of view, I think we went alone. It's supported by the Chief Constable, and it's supported by the PCVC in Durham. There's trial areas. The Ministry of Justice looking for four trial areas, which they've got, I think, in West Yorkshire and other forces. And there's also four other forces in the country who are currently running whatever their force is, checkpoint schemes. So I think not just in relation to drugs, but across the whole critical pathways agenda and the diversion within the law. Lots and lots of other forces are coming round to the issue that we've got to do something different, and if other people can't do it, then the police will have to do it in consultation with partners. Whether that means that they all agree that there should be changes to the Misuse of Drugs Act, I guess lots of them do think they should, but I don't know anybody who would say that. But it stands to reason that if you're trying to work with people to reduce the harms they cause because they're vulnerable people themselves, lots of British policemen would think that you should reform them.
I mean, obviously, can't speak on behalf of all the police forces across the whole United Kingdom, but did the Police Federation, for example, take a view on this? What is their current approach to the Misuse of Drugs Act? And how would we get a view of the police force, if you want to call it as such, across the UK on this issue?
The Federation have come out, I believe, for a public consultation on drug policy towards a health-based approach. That was at the last conference.
Okay.
Correct me if I'm wrong on that.
We'll see if we could locate that then.
But there is a national working group within the National Police Council for out-of-court disposals, which is what our scheme fits within, and that of Checkpoint. So there is an appetite nationally for change for a number of offences, not just drugs. And, we're moving in that direction. But I think if you collectively asked the opinion of most police officers, I think there's a general appetite for a health-based approach to simple possession.
Okay, thank you.
I think the national position, the National Police Chiefs Council and the National Police Chiefs Council lead could obviously provide that view on behalf of the police service as a whole. I think what's really interesting is from a police service, I think we're very good at where we're responsible and accountable. We take the lead and we take the lead with pride and we get stuck in. I think we find ourselves in a difficult position where we've been in the lead. I think all the informed wisdom is that this is a health issue. I think one of the interesting things is are health happy now to take the lead?
Yeah. Yes.
You know, so we can talk about changes in the legislation from an enforcement perspective, but actually health service will need a change in the legislation as a key enabler for them to do their work. And I think seeking the views of senior police officers and the National Police Chiefs Council is one thing, but actually the health service as well, if this is going to be seen as a health issue rather than just the police saying it is, then that's going to need an enabling framework.
And that would imply a change in lead responsibility at UK level, from the Home Office being chairing the UK Drug Strategy Board to the Department of Health and Social Care chairing the Drug Strategy Board. So the health is clearly in the lead. And I also think, going back to an earlier question, that would, if the Department of Health and Social Care were in charge of drug policy and coordinating drug policy across departments, then the Department of Health has a more institutional commitment to the use of evidence and spending money wisely on the basis of evidence than does the Home Office. So I think that would also have the effect of introducing a more evidence-based approach to drug policy if the Department of Health and Social Care were in charge of it rather than the Home Office.
And we all remember the example of Professor Nutt when he was presenting his particular proposals to government and the way that the press campaign was always organised and orchestrated against.
We just heard a hearing before the Scottish Affairs Committee of the House of Commons. The chair of the committee was Pete Wishart. The question you just heard put was by Member of Parliament Tommy Shepherd. The witnesses were Professor Alex Stevens from the University of Kent, Chief Inspector Jason Kew from Thames Valley, Assistant Chief Constable Steve Johnson from Police Scotland, and Superintendent Kevin Weir from the Durham Police. You have been listening to Century of Lies. We're a production of the Drug Truth Network for the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network on the web at Drug Truth. Truth.net. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh, editor of DrugWarFacts.org. So long! For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.